You're listening to the Tumbling Saber Podcast, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Check us out on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and take your first step into a larger world. Happy 2017. It is episode 56 of the Tumbling Saber Podcast, and we're back ready for a new year of Star Wars goodness. I'm ready. I know you guys are ready. I know these guys are ready. Corey, how you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
I'm doing good. Happy New Year to you, and a Happy New Year to James. How's it going, man?
Terrific, Kyle. Happy New Year, buddy, and all the best to everybody.
All the best to our listeners and to everybody at the Commonwealth. It's going to be a good year. I mean, every year in Star Wars is a good year. Although, got to say, we thought 2016 was going to end on a big fat high with the release of Rogue One, but the universe had other plans and kind of pulled the rug out from under us at the end there. Corey, you didn't get a chance to join us on our Carrie Fisher tribute show, so I'm sure you wanted to get some stuff off your chest. So the floor is yours if you want to talk about our beloved general and princess.
Yeah, I mean, what is there really to say? Like, when I first heard the news that, you know, what had happened, like, you know, I thought it was bad. You know, from initial reports, they weren't good, and I felt sick. Like, it's hard to describe. You know, like, it's almost as if someone we know, this happened to someone we know, knew, you know, it's, it was almost surreal. It hurts. I don't think I've ever had, a celebrity death has never affected me this much, like, ever. I don't know,
No, I don't, I can't, not one that I can recall. Like, this one I'm going to remember for a long, long time.
Robin Williams was a bad one, but this is just like, wow. You're just not ready, you know? Like, it was so sudden.
And we don't expect bad things to happen in Star Wars land, you know? It's been so, everything since, 2012, since Disney took over, has been so good, and this was just so bad. So bad.
Yeah, it hurt. Like, I was really, really bummed. Now.
You know, I think part of it is when the news of her heart attack came, it was Christmas Eve, and I think for a lot of people it was really easy to just say, well, you know, it's the holidays, I'm busy, I'm thinking about Christmas with my family and blah, 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 and all the stuff I got to do. And it was really easy to just wish her well and assume that things would work out. And then comes December 27th and it didn't work out whatsoever. So I think that kind of made it, in a way, a lot worse.
Yeah. Like, I didn't want to give up hope, that's for sure. But I had a bad feeling from initial reports where not very good, but then we had heard she was in stable condition, which was promising. So I think that's where kind of people put it on autopilot a bit, you know, like you'd said, in a way.
Yeah, but you could stabilize and still be comatose.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. That's horrible. Like, she's a great woman, you know? Like, it's sad for the most part. Like, I have to say, like, I know she's done many other things. I've never read any of her books or anything like that, but I'm pretty sure I'll definitely sink my teeth into some of them at this point now. It's, you know, hindsight's 20/20, I guess, but it's sad.
That's devastating. It's just a devastating blow. Like, I asked Steve on our Journals of the Willing show, like, I don't think it gets much worse than this. I don't think it can. Based on the outpouring we saw, I don't think it gets any worse, whether it's Mark Hamill or Harrison Ford or George Lucas or anybody else. I don't think it gets worse.
No, I think you're right there. Like, she's our princess. Like,
it's not, and there's no, I mean, there's no, absolutely no competition. Like, you know, to what I'm about to say, I don't want anybody to say, you know, one death would be worse than the other. But in terms of like mass attended vigils, I think if Indiana Jones and Han Solo and countless other characters, I think if Harrison Ford passed, that might be the only other star who you know, affected the world more.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Hollywood impact goes, he no doubt had more than almost anybody, period.
Never was mind, just one of the biggest out there, period. Exactly. And she might have been more of a behind-the-scenes player than he was. You know, script doctor extraordinaire, etc. But yeah, I think in terms of like, you know, the vigils and all the crazy outpouring of emotion that we've seen, the heartbreak, I think Harrison Ford might equal or even surpass that level in terms of the worst things that could happen in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of it has to do with the way in which you go out.
For sure. And she's young, 60.
Like she went 60s, not old. And just by a massive heart attack like that, that it came as a shock. Whereas, you know, somebody might slowly wither away due to some sort of, you know, wasting disease. And when they go, you go, yeah, tragic, but, you know, we knew this was coming.
True.
Yeah, it was very sudden.
But anyway, with each day we put, a little bit more space between her passing and you know, where we're at. So it only gets easier from here, fans. So I guess stick with it until you see the episode 8 trailer, and then you can cry all over again, and then cry again once you see episode 8 itself.
Yeah, that's right. That's one thing I was thinking about recently too. Like, I haven't gone and done it yet, but going and rewatching the saga now, you know, is the first time around. Every time now, I think it's going to be a little different, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I was about to say from the outset, you know, in trying to see if there was another celebrity passing that rivals, you know, the hurt caused by Carrie's passing. And it wasn't a death, but you guys remember when Gord Downey was diagnosed with brain cancer and we got that news. That was as devastating as this for me anyway.
Agreed.
Even though he hadn't quite yet passed or still hasn't passed. That was just as much of a gut punch.
Yeah.
Which for anybody listening who doesn't know who Gord Downey is and who the Tragically Hip is, for us to say that learning of Gord Downey's ultimate fate, you know, affecting us in the same way that Carrie Fisher would, that sort of says what that person means to us.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to our show before, because we speak about the Tragically Hip every third show, I think it's in our contract. But go check them out. They make some really great music.
One awesome thing that's come of all this is just being on Twitter and seeing everyone like share and mourn together, but all these stories that people are telling, and you know, I've learned so much about her in the past few days that I kind of almost had no clue about, you know. I just have like a newfound respect for her. Like, she had it rough, man.
Well, yeah, she grew up in that celebrity culture from age of a small child from the very beginning. So definitely a different upbringing than you or I are used to. So who's to say how that affected her? I mean, she definitely had her share of personal struggles, and she wore them bravely on her sleeve. So she's to be forever commended for that. But to your other point, I think, James, you had brought it up on our tribute episode last week. I had no clue that she could speak French.
Oh, wasn't that a great clip that it was circulating around last week?
There's more than one. Like, I went on YouTube and started looking for Carrie Fisher doing French interviews. There's a bunch of them.
There you go.
And, you know, for three guys living in Quebec who need to deal in French at least a little bit every single day of our lives, to see her doing that was endlessly impressive to me as a teenager. I don't even know where or how she learned that, but her vocabulary was quite good. She has the French, like the Parisian French accent, pretty down, even though you know, you could tell she's clearly North American. But I was absolutely blown away that she could carry a conversation like that.
Yeah, she was impressive. Nervous a little bit in the clip I saw, but very well spoken and she was worldly. I think we talked about this a little bit, you know, on last week's Journals of the Willing as well. But that's part of what gives her that, you know, the ability to look so wise and beyond her years on screen playing Leia is the fact that she was so worldly at a young age, that she did grow up in the culture that she did.
Yeah, all of those experiences that she had as such a young kid were kind of baked into her DNA, which just came out of her in her performances. So a great call when they finally chose Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. Yeah. They definitely nailed that.
Well, yeah, right, somber so time's over. It's, you know, we've paid our respects, but I think we got happier and more upbeat things to talk about, Kyle. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. We got to try and pick up the fandom here and start putting some distance between and move things forward as I think she would probably hope we would do by now.
Yeah, no, she didn't seem like the kind of person who would like a lot of dwelling.
No, she'd say, you know, say your piece, have a drink, have a smoke, doing a line of coke, and get on with your life.
Yeah, she was so awesome like that. She had such a character.
Yeah, total legend. Absolute legend. Anyway, so like James said, let's move on to happier things. Let's talk about what's more fun and joyous than the holidays that we're just passing through the other side of 2017. Let's unpack our holidays here, guys. James, how was your Christmas, your New Year's, all that stuff?
Wonderful. I'll do the quick wrap up and just say I love the holidays. I love Christmas time in general. Happy people who, you know, go out of their way to do nice things for each other. I got young kids, so I get to see the, you know, the magic of Santa Claus and naughty lists and kids who go to bed early and get up earlier. The excitement, the sugar rushes and all that, that we really had a sort of perfect little bubble of a Christmas where, everybody was happy, healthy and together, and couldn't have gone much better, really.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Corey, I partly know the answer to your Christmas, but explain it to the listeners. How was your Christmas going? Any Star Wars components to your Christmas?
Big time, yeah. this year was great for me and first and foremost, my son. Like, he had a great Christmas. Like, he's 4 years old, so it was just, like James said, magical. Like, couldn't be more fun to watch him on, like, building up to Christmas. And
yeah
it was a great Christmas this year. We had a really busy, like, we went out in the morning, you know, came back home, I came to your place in the afternoon, opened gifts. I think I won Christmas. I bought Kyle's son a Kylo Ren lightsaber.
I saw that.
Yeah, he was not putting that down. Like, he was done with Christmas after that. I'd never seen a kid do that before. Yo, buddy, we got more presents for you. No! Like, he was done. That did it.
Awesome.
I was pretty happy about that. And myself as well. It's been a long time, man. But wow, I had a good haul this year, man. Like, I got some nice, nice Star Wars merch, man. I was happy.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
What's the highlight? What's the collection piece, pièce de résistance?
Well, now I'm insulted.
I was setting him up, Kyle. I was setting him up.
It's a toss-up between the Ahsoka and that they got that the black 6-inch black series Ahsoka, and I got the 3-pack of droids there. The Black Series droids.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're dope.
Yeah, you did very well.
Yeah, big time.
And Kyle?
That's not all about me.
How was Christmas at the other Roussel household?
A little bit chaotic. I don't have a huge house, but it's packed with grandparents and grandkids and yeah, it's a little bit messy for quite a while there. And we're kind of weird that way. Like, our kids don't bounce out of bed and demand to start opening presents at 6 a.m. They're just not. I don't know if it's because we've wired them that way. Even Corey and I, as kids, we were always once to, you know, we would get up, we'd have a big, huge breakfast, and only by late morning and sometimes into the afternoon, then we would start opening our gifts.
Not as kids, though.
And that's kind of carried over for me.
When we were younger?
Yeah, you're right.
Once we hit like 10, 12, 11, I was like, yeah, sleep's kind of good.
You're right. You're right about that. But anyway, my kids don't freak out as soon as they roll out of bed in the morning and want to open presents. They're happy to do their thing, and which is fine by me, but leads to a problem in the afternoon when Candace and I need to start cooking dinner, and the kid now it's present time. So worlds are colliding here, and there's just it becomes kind of messy. And anyway, I wish I could say I remembered more, because the day just goes by so quickly. You don't really have a lot of time to sit down and relax and talk to people. It's just sort of one station to the next. And I guess that will only get easier over the years. But, I look back now and I can't complain about my Christmas at all.
Yeah, it was fun, man. So much food. Oh, like us too. When I left your place, came back here. All the family, on my wife's side was here. Oh my God. I think we made anyway, whatever. It was like three full course meals. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I still have some food left over here.
Oh yeah.
But not much Star Wars merch on my end. I got, Corey picked me up the Rogue One novelization, which was nice because I wasn't sure I was going to buy that on my own. And, you know, the list is always so full of other things that I haven't read that it was nice to get something that I wanted but probably wouldn't have picked up on my own.
Yeah, those are the best gifts.
And my wife hit a home run. She went out and bought Pablo Hidalgo's The Propaganda of Star Wars book.
Yeah, that's a beauty, which, man.
Yeah, it's a really nice book. And definitely we'll be talking about that on Journals of the Willing, even if Steve hasn't read the book. I'm definitely going to comb through it and give some of the highlights. But yeah, another treasure trove type book. But other than that, it's almost as if people don't know that I like Star Wars. But anyway, it's safe to say definitely good holidays were had. And now we get to wait, 3 months for our next holiday? It's that we're entering sort of the black hole of winter here, where there's just no break for months on end here.
What is it? I think it's almost like the second week in January or second week in January. They call it like Blue Monday or something. You ever hear that?
No,
that's a baseball thing.
In Montreal, there's only one Blue Monday.
Yeah, that's a baseball thing.
And we don't talk about it. Yeah, so just throw some dirt on that. We're not talking about Blue Monday here.
I heard something like it's like the day of the year where there's the most abundance of depression, basically. It's like you're in the lull after the holidays. There's that stretch to the next vacation or whatever.
Yeah, and that's when the credit card bills start rolling in and you start having all that buyer's remorse. I think you're right. It is a thing.
Well, we just won't call it, we'll call it Black Tuesday or Dark Navy Wednesday.
But you know what, guys? The best gift I got over the holidays was a little break and entering.
Ha!
A couple of guys broke into the Tumbling Saber Studios here and gifted myself and the listeners a super special bonus Christmas special episode of the podcast. It's no secret now that I had fallen really quite sick very suddenly the night before we were, or the night of that we were going to record episode 56, which we're now doing.
It was hours before, really. I mean, I don't know how long ago before you started feeling ill, but you sent a text out just a couple hours before the show saying, guys, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, it was literally, I was really up and up on that one. Like, I started feeling bad and I say, oh, this is not going to end well. I can feel it. And I just informed you guys right away. Yeah, but go back and if you haven't already, go check out that episode, the Christmas special that Corey and James did. It's really hilarious. A lot of good feedback from that show.
Hey, thanks, man.
Might be an annual thing.
Yeah, it was fun.
We did have fun. Corey and I had a good time that night. We were up late. We were giggling over silly things by the end, like a couple of little kids.
Yeah, I think it was probably it was literally
drink
literally
drink.
2 a.m. when I went to bed anyhow. And James, I think you stayed up till like 4 or something, no?
Yeah, I wanted to can the show before we went to bed. But all to say, yeah, if you haven't checked out the Sith Disturbers, that was our Christmas gift to Kyle. And it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to listen to.
It was fun creating it too. I have to say, like, quickly, like, we were talking about it, bouncing ideas. And then we'd write something down. And then, okay, like, it just kept flowing and flowing. You know, we had... Next thing you know, we're just like, oh my God, like, okay, let's do this.
Well, yeah, and I don't think people realize that. Like, you guys put that show together in a blink of an eye. Like, there was literally no chance to plan this. It was, there was no time. It was, Kyle's out, what do we do? And so you just kind of put pen to paper and hammered out some ideas. It was amazing.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, we made up a couple of games and we had some fun.
And you even managed to talk a little bit of Star Wars.
We squeezed some Star Wars in there.
So, James, one of the things you talked about there was the retcon situation from Rogue One, where the ventilation shaft and the brilliant retconning of that, where it was not necessarily a design flaw that the Empire just didn't know they were doing. It was that Galen Erso had specifically designed it as a weakness for somebody to eventually exploit.
You set that up perfectly because I'm so torn. On the one hand, I think it's an absolutely brilliant retcon of a, you know, basically laughable situation. That was the joke in Star Wars. How could they have overlooked this huge problem with the Death Star? So I love the retconning of it. However, it reframes A New Hope in a way that I wonder if it affects anybody's enjoyment or, you know, changes the way they see the climax of A New Hope.
Well, I don't know if it changes the climax for me, but it kind of adds a layer of complexity to the overall saga. And you know, I'm working on a blog post. It might be out by the time this podcast drops, but you tell me what you think. So, thinking to A New Hope, where General Dodonna is debriefing all of the Rebel pilots about this 2 meter wide shaft that they have to hit, and they're all going, oh my God, like, that, this is impossible, how are we going to do this? And then the only guy who's saying it's not impossible is Luke. Guys, no problem, I used to do this at home, this is no big deal. Now, either that's Luke's, you know, cockeyed optimism, his naivete, if you will, or just that he's the only one in the room that has the Force in his back pocket. I don't know. You can, I guess, either of those answers are equally valid. But, you know, I thought about this a lot, actually. And I wonder that, this is easier for people that read Catalyst. But we know that Galen, he didn't dump on the Force, but nor did he actually disregard it. But he was a man of science, so you can kind of figure out where he falls on the mystical versus the actual, the measurable. So we know that, we know that Lyra in Rogue One tells Jyn to trust the Force as she puts that necklace around her neck. And in Catalyst, again, Lyra is very strong, very bullish on the Force and believing in the Jedi's purpose and in the whole deal of the Force. So I wonder, spoilers here, posthumously, as Lyra was killed in Rogue One, if when Galen has his change of heart, and decides to go work for the Empire, but decides he's going to get vengeance in his own way. I wonder if a little bit of Lyra had rubbed off on Galen and he decided to as well trust the Force. And did he know that only a Jedi or somebody using the Force would be able to make that shot? So in essence, was Galen trusting the Force as Lyra would have hoped he would? And I think the answer is, I choose to believe the answer is yes. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but I'm going with yes. James, what do you think? I've just been prattling on here.
I'm going to also choose to believe that. I like that. I've been looking for a way I think I said to you in a text, at least, or maybe when we were talking about it, that the problem for me was that, you know, Luke's journey in A New Hope sort of culminated with him, you know, making an impossible shot, and the new Sitch sort of made it seem like, you know, hit the ventilation shaft anywhere and the whole thing, you know, blows up. The whole thing goes like a chain reaction, which seemed a little different than the like perfect shot required to go all the way down to the bottom of the vent shaft to, you know, only Luke could do it. So until your sort of, I don't know if explanation is the right word, but your hypothesis, I didn't really have a good answer as to how that could still be Luke's, shining moment. But I can accept your version, and it doesn't change for me A New Hope so much anymore. I'm gonna have to digest a little more, but I think you're onto something there. What do you think, Corey?
Yeah, I kind of agree. Well, first and foremost, it never really bothered me all that much. Like, I have to see Rogue One again to see, like, you know, Galen was dying when he said all this to Jin. Like, oh no, that was in the message. You're right. But still, like, you need someone with that kind of talent, like, to make that shot. Like, and there were a couple of rumors on that shot. Like, a lot of people, like, came, well, one person came close. But, yeah, like, Luke went, he got the swoosh, man, you know? He didn't get rim.
Nothing but that. No, I know what you're saying. It just, for me, it changed a little bit. In terms of, like, they found this one in a million, this needle in a haystack. Like, they found the hope beyond hope. And it changed a little bit to become like there's, you know, there's this like off button for the thing, and you just got to hit it. It just, the feeling of this, of the ending sort of changed for me a little bit, the framing of it. It didn't feel so, doesn't feel so one in a million. I watched it since, and it just felt way less one in a million. It was like, oh, just hit that shaft that Galen put in there that's going to chain react the whole thing. I don't know. I'm not saying it ruined it for me, but I like Kyle's version. I think I can live with that.
Yeah, because it still makes it an impossible shot that only works if Galen buys into the Force and feels like only somebody using the Force might be able to make this.
It still has to be that Luke was special. And so that, yes, I like a version where Luke is still special.
Well, everything about that movie, if you really think about it, like the message, like the team getting assembled, the mission, like each person in that, on that team too, has this role that if one of them fails, they all fail. So yeah, I like the fact that he's let go and trust in the wills of the Force.
And what I think what it also does is in a way it elevates Lyra to a very heroic role.
Yes, that's a good point. It gives her more significance. I mean, it gives her more importance for sure.
Because a lot of people were not very happy with how she was just disposed of so quickly. And I guess it was out of necessity in moving the story along quickly. But yeah, after having read Catalyst and getting to know Lyra pretty well, you know, it was kind of a bummer to see her go. But I think this is a way that validates the entire character and leaves a lasting mark, because she may have swayed her husband, and she may have been the one to really help bring down the entire Death Star.
Yeah.
But something else, this is more of a funny tangent more than anything. You know, after reading Catalyst and swimming in Star Wars for 30 plus years, you know, we know now it took the Empire untold resources and decades to build this Death Star. It's destroyed like 3 days after its unveiling, which I find endlessly funny.
It's the Titanic of weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
It really is. It really, really, I mean, not that any of us were around when the Titanic was here, but it's not hard to look up the press clippings of all the promotion that this ship got. And then its maiden voyage, boom, it's done. I find it so funny that the Empire had just invested so much in this, and here comes this little gang of rebels. One day they steal the plans, the next day they blow the whole damn thing up. And then the Empire went and built another one. And before that one even has its maiden voyage, the rebels destroy it.
This could be old EU stuff, or legend stuff, excuse me, but isn't the second Death Star, isn't it in construction, like, it didn't take 3 years to build this thing, right? Like, I think it was in production for a long, long time, and I think it was much, much, like, significantly bigger than the original Death Star as well.
I looked it up, and I think Talk Star Wars touched on this as well. So the original Death Star, the first one that we just saw in Rogue One,
it's 123 kilometers.
It's 100. The diameter is 120, 123, whatever it is, and the second Death Star is 160. So it's a little bit bigger. But if they were being built simultaneously, which I don't think they could have done that. It doesn't make sense to me that they could have done that. Otherwise, the design would be the same. They were having such issues. They're having such issues getting the laser done for the first one. How would they have had a chance to design and perfect an entire system for a second Death Star, which didn't function the same way?
Well, think about it. Like, just the one that we see in A New Hope, it took them, 15 years to build?
Oh, I know. From that perspective, yeah, you have to assume that it took them at least that long to build. But then if that's the case, then Galen becomes useless. Like, you didn't need him because you had a secondary design that worked better than the first.
No, I think they were just banking. Like, they had him in their pocket at that point, I guess.
I don't know. I think that's something they need to work out, because one way or the other, something doesn't pass the sniff test, I don't think. That's a conversation for another day. We got a whole lot of news to catch up on here, since it's been a while since we did a regular Tumbling Saber podcast. So let's get into Ashla Bendu Bogan news topics here. Who wants to reach into the grab bag first?
Corey, you go for it.
Let's do I'm going to go with Ashla for Lucasfilm recruiting next animated series.
Okay.
Makes sense. All right, go for it.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a great idea. I guess the real question is, where do we want to see this show go? And, well, first and foremost, I can't believe they're, you know, well, I can believe, but I'm so excited already that, and this again is hearsay from what we saw in this article, but they don't know for sure, but it's speculation, but it seems like that's what's going down, is that they're starting to plan, already start getting the pawns in place, right, to produce this thing. And where would I want to see this thing go? I think the obvious answer is, you guys are going to say old school, but after having thought about it and reading this article, I think it's really going to be Rebels dependent, in the sense that once Rebels end, like, it depends how Rebels ends, basically. You know what I mean? Like, if Rebels, because we see, you know, characters from this series in, or we hear of them, they have Easter eggs in Rogue One. So who knows, maybe they can carry on in that light. But personally, again, what I want to see is, I want to start seeing them build the history and the lore more of this franchise. get a bigger understanding for what the Jedi were.
Yeah, that's fair, for sure. Yeah, I think the writing was on the wall. Once Dave Filoni was elevated to, I forget what his post is now, but sort of taken off Rebels as supervising director and elevated to, you know, sort of the granddaddy of all animated development at Lucasfilm. Yeah, so I think that kind of indicated to everybody that something else was in the works. And not that we didn't think they would do something anyway without that tidbit of news. But now this came out, so the story comes from comicbook.com, who picked it off from Twitter user Pete Morrison. Yeah, Lucasfilm had a job posting for a storyboard artist, which I think is really cool and is a possible clue. That's really what this is, a possible clue of new animated stuff. My hope, I don't know if they're just going to take surviving Rebels characters and just advance them in the timeline and just put them in into a new show. I don't know that they'll do that, but I want them to get out of the pre or post A New Hope timeline. I think we've spent enough time there for now. I think it's safe to get out of there. And if they're not going to go back in time, which I think is an interesting idea, I'd like to see them start exploring post-Return of the Jedi. What do you think, James?
I agree with that. We've said on the show more than once that we'd like to see some ancient Jedi stuff. I'd be just about as interested to see some post-Jedi stuff. I mean, I've got the least weight behind my opinion since I'm still struggling to get through season two of... Not that I'm struggling, that's the wrong word. I just haven't had time to get back into season two. So, you know, to say that I'm satiated with that time frame is probably not true yet. Given a choice, I would definitely love to see some post-Jedi stuff.
Yeah, it almost feels like...
With which characters, though? Like the main cast or like all new set of characters?
You could carry over some. Some would be very, you know, some young characters would be very old. Mostly new characters, I think I'd like to see.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like a little bit now between many of the novels, the comic book series especially, Rebels, does it feel a lot like they're really leveraging this whole nostalgia of this, like the 77 era stuff? Like, is it time to move on from that and really start exploring different eras? Even if it's post-Jedi, which isn't all that different. It's just a handful of years or maybe a decade later if you want to stretch it. Just get out of that sandbox.
They're playing a game right now. They don't know what they're going to do themselves. They play it by ear, and you know they're testing things as they go.
I think that it's like, true that they're testing, but I don't think it's true they don't know. I think what they're doing is very calculated. They're trying to get the core fan base invested in all the new stuff they want to launch, the comic books.
Yeah, they want to set the meat hooks in.
Well, that's it. They start everything off in that time frame that we all love, and it's, you know, super familiar, warm and fuzzy land. And then we're invested to jump into the new stories.
Exactly. No, I totally 100% agree.
They want to hang us upside down and shake all the money out of our pockets before we're too old to care anymore. So let's get all these nostalgic guys and squeeze them for as many dollars as we can.
Correct.
Let's get all these animated shows and books and comics, and let's hit heavy and hard in that era that strikes a chord with all these people and take them for all they're worth. Then we'll move on because we'll have hooked a brand new generation via The Force Awakens, via Rogue One. Yeah, they've got this figured out, Corey.
That's the plan. Like,
by ear.
I agree with you guys. Like, but put it this way. Like, my point was, had they brought back Star Wars and said, like, it would have been a success no matter what. But if they brought back Star Wars and said, okay, you know what, we're telling a story, like, totally different from what you guys know right off the cuff, that they wouldn't do it from a business standpoint. Like, they have to use these characters that we know and love to, again, like, get us back into where we were or where we need to be, and get all these new fans on board as well before they can start delving into different aspects of the universe or the galaxy.
For sure. Disney did not spend billions to buy Star Wars because they want to sell. They want to tell space stories. They spent billions because they want to own Han Solo and Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and it's you know, Ahsoka, et cetera, et cetera. They want the characters that everybody loves.
Again, it's a whole galaxy out there. Like, yes, people want those characters, but at the same time, they have the opportunity to create a multitude of new and loved characters as well.
Which they will do once they're done shaking the money tree of nostalgic old fans. They will definitely do that. They're going to have no choice but to do that at some point. But as far as this new animated series, where I disagree with you, Corey, is I don't think they're playing it by ear. I think they know exactly where they're going.
Well, at this point, yeah. Like, for sure they have some kind of outline as to what frame they've chosen.
No, I don't think it's an outline. I think it's a direction. I think they have the project set, and it's moving forward.
Oh, for sure. Like, Dave Filoni is definitely on top of this. Like, if they're starting to hire people, they definitely have a good sense of direction right now.
Absolutely, they do. Anyway, I'm definitely excited because I've loved every bit of animation they've done so far. I mean, it's got their episodes that leave me wanting more. And not necessarily because it was a great episode, just that it was sometimes they're a little bit boring. But I'm definitely all in for whatever. If Filoni is backing this, I'm totally all in on whatever era they choose. I'm just hoping selfishly that they get out of the, you know, 2 years before and 2 years after A New Hope area.
No, I think they will
Let's get away from that.
I think they will, but you never know. I'm really hoping they take it way far back, like take it really far back and somehow keep it connected somehow, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's
here,
easily
enough
done,
Corey, bold prediction. So hear me now, believe me later. I don't even know if I even believe this, but I'm going to make a bold prediction. If we get ancient Jedi stories, we're going to find out that Shuroot's ancestor was played a similar role to Shuroot did, like a guardian of the wills.
That's interesting.
He comes from a long line of protectors. Yeah. That would be a natural thing to do and a really cool thing to do. All right, James, reach in there and grab another news item out.
Okay, I'll reach in with both hands and pull out a giant puppet. So we've got in our news bag, it says that they've announced and confirmed that that Snoke, whoever he is going to be a giant puppet. And so I'm going to tag this with an Ashla.
Yes.
I almost went Bendu, but I like the idea of the puppet, and I sort of said I didn't love the CGI. I don't think it was a mistake. I'm glad they CGI'd Tarkin and Leia in that it, you know, gets us one step closer to really, really undetectable CGI. But I like the puppets from the original series. Even Yoda, who looks, you know, super dated by today's standards. I like the real analog feel to the puppet acting. So I think with modern puppeteering, I'm really anxious to see what they pull off. And I like the idea also that I think there's an outside chance that there's something to Snoke is a puppet beyond the fact that that's just how they're portraying him on screen. Like, is it possible maybe that that's metaphoric and a hint that maybe he's not the mastermind?
We've speculated on that before, like the man behind the curtain, kind of.
I don't know. I just like the idea that maybe that's a hint.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. There's no way to invalidate that, so sure, I'll go with that. I mean, I don't think there's any indication that there's anybody behind or above Snoke in terms of the hierarchy of the First Order. But there could be. We don't know anything about Del Toro yet. Maybe he's the mastermind.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting, certainly, to see how that all plays out. But I don't think we've seen a really cool puppet in a while in a movie. Like, what's the last really cool puppet we saw? Is it Yoda?
Aliens.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to count any of the Muppet movies, Corey. We love the Muppets, you and I, but...
No, but
it's funny that they're calling this a puppet and not a suit.
No, that I think it is going to be a puppet with like a marionette style puppet. I get the impression.
Yeah, because he's huge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the story on makingstarwars.net, it says that he's going to be a huge puppet around 7 to 8 feet tall, taking several people to operate. Okay, and a man inside the suit to make him walk, which makes more sense to me.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I love it. Like, it says a few things about the character as well. Like, you know, I guess they could CGI that kind of stuff in, but, you know, being a puppet, I don't think you're going to be doing too many, like, action sequences. But yeah, for sure, that's a CGI thing. But I'm 100% on the same page as James. Like, I think that whole industry has been just neglected in film. Take it for granted.
Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors. He was a good puppet. It has been neglected, Corey. I agree.
It's just because it's so much easier now to do it by computer, right? Like people just kind of it's like a dying art almost. And when done properly, it's awesome. I always, even to this day, I way prefer puppet Yoda to. Like CGI Yoda.
That's us. I would like to ask younger kids. I'd like to ask Steve, who's a lot younger than any of us. Yeah, I would be curious to know what kids who grew up as children, 6, 7, 10 years old, watching the prequels, what they thought. Of puppet Yoda versus CG Yoda that they grew up with.
I hate YouTube.
I wonder if we get different answers.
Every time you say puppet Yoda, I get rocking and rolling. You've seen that bad lip reading, of course. No. Nope.
Yeah. Well, bad lip readings are hilarious.
Oh my God. If you haven't seen the Yoda one about the seagull song, it's the funniest thing I've seen in maybe 2016.
Oh, you gotta link us to that after.
Yeah, I will for sure.
It's good.
It's so good.
So I have two thoughts on this Snoke as a puppet thing. And overall, yeah, I think it's going to be really cool if they do this as a puppet. It'll be something that we've not seen before. And I think it does speak a little bit to the character in that he's so weird and clearly not human, just humanoid-ish, that you can't necessarily... depend on a human to pull it off. But I think there's a danger in assuming that this is only going to be a practical puppet. I think that there's going to be definitely a CG element to this. And I submit Ankar Plot as sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Predecessor of that. Like there was a suit that Simon Pegg wore.
Yeah.
But it had all kinds of CG enhancements.
No, that definitely establishes precedent for you, for sure. And I think you're probably right.
Precedent. That's the word.
Well, you're 100% right on that, for sure. Just the fine detail of things, they'll smooth things over a bit.
And I think what you sort of touched on there was, you know, humans move like humans, but puppets can, you know, if you're doing a creature that's not, maybe it's humanoid, but it's not a human, then it's, if you're going to paint over it with CGI, it's still going to move like a person if it's just a guy in a bodysuit. Whereas the puppet with puppeteers can move differently and you'll capture something completely different.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that's really all I have to say about that.
I'm just glad you chose it as an Ashla topic, James. Like I thought whoever chose it was going to go Bendu on it. But
I was going to go Bendu just because I could see that there are some potential downsides to using a puppet. And I could see how some people might go on negative. But since I pulled it out of the bag and I'm keen on the idea, Ashla it is.
Word.
And I do think very strongly that if there's going to be any action sequences involving Snoke, that I think for those you're going to get a CG Snoke. I think in a lot of cases they'll use the puppet, but I think in any type of action shots you would see a CG snow.
On the one hand, I think you could be right. On the other hand, if I think of a movie like Crouching Tiger or any of the like really wire, high use of wire movies, the action looks really good where they paint out those wires. So I'm just thinking a puppet, a marionette's just a you know, another version of that kind of fight. I think it could be done.
I think it could be done. I think it's really challenging to move a puppet of that size in an action sequence. Sure. Unless
they could scale it, maybe.
Type of action. Yeah, maybe his type of action doesn't call for the type of hyperkinetic movement that we might be expecting.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just very slow and deliberate about his movements.
The Emperor really never moved terribly impressively, but still displayed immense power.
Yeah, and he did in Revenge of the Sith, but
yeah, that's true.
You're right.
I was talking about Theo Timor, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, okay, your
I'm
turn.
I'm going to stick my arm in the bag and hope not get bit by a creature in there. And I'm going to yank out. I'm gonna bogan something, you guys.
Nice. No gray area here.
No. So. This is going back a while now, so people are going to have to like dust off their memory caps. But Daisy Ridley thinks the answer to Rey's parentage is in The Force Awakens. Which, oh man, this headline spread like wildfire. Which, in the headline itself, is pure misleading clickbait. Because...
I knew you were going to choose this one.
You know me and how I'm going to just try and stomp on clickbait whenever I see it. But Daisy Ridley thinks the answer to her parentage is in The Force Awakens. That headline was everywhere. No, she doesn't. She did. But she doesn't anymore. So in an interview with Time Out London, she basically said that she, after the movie wrapped and they had kind of seen the movie, in her mind, it was obvious who the parent was, or who her parents were. But after speaking to, I guess, cast and crew and people involved with the movie, she goes, oh, that's not, the answer is not, like, they don't have the answer at all. But, let's not let that snippet derail a good clickbait headline. I was, again, really, my blood pressure just shot through the roof. So, you could have retitled this as Daisy Ridley thought the answer to Rey's parentage was in The Force Awakens, and that would be perfectly fine. But to title it as though she present day continues to think that is wrong and misleading. Would you not agree?
Very much so. And I wonder, whose benefit is that? Really, it's the only people who benefit from that are people who sell product. Like, it's going to make you want to watch the movie again. Like, how does Disney get that clickbait out there? That's what I want to know.
Well, it's not, I don't think it has anything to do with Disney.
I know it's not directly, but like, it's so positive for them. I just,
they love it.
It's like it's win-win. That's what I mean. It's like, there's no bad press for these guys, right? That's just win-win for them.
Yeah, it's a win-win for them, and it's a win-win. It's a win for these websites who post that headline and people go, oh, "What? Who are her parents? Who's Rey's parents?" And they click and they go, "Oh, well, I didn't get the answer. There is no answer. Daisy really doesn't think that at all. She's her mind has been changed. She's waiting like the rest of us. I just clicked this for nothing." And then that website owner turns around to his advertisers and goes, "See, your ad was you got." 5,000 impressions. Look how well you're doing. It's filthy. It's dirty. I don't like it. Anyway, that's my most recent clickbait rant. I've been hanging on to that one for a while.
Bogan it is.
Bogan. Bogus Bogan. All right, so should we do like a snaking list here? Should I go again and then we'll snake backwards down the list? Or you want to go around the circle again?
Like a lottery draft, you mean? Like we're doing a hockey pool?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
All right, so I'm going to stick my arm back in the bag. And I'm gonna go... let me see what we got here. This is a 4K version of A New Hope exists. I'm gonna Ashla that for I guess various reasons. I'm gonna assume that the three of us are living in the 21st century and we all have HD TV at home.
Correct.
Indeed.
All right, so we're all watching in what I guess is now considered the standard. But will either of you adopt 4K at some point, or are you gonna hold on to your 1080 stuff for as long as you possibly can?
I'm always late. Yeah, I'm always last to change on these things. I'll wait.
It depends, really, like on price and stuff. I'm definitely not gonna be like, you know, when it first comes out and this and that, but
don't look now, 4K is already out.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not gonna be part of that that first wave of people. Like, I can wait till the price comes down considerably. I'm very happy with the TV that I have right now.
Yeah, because the prices of 1080p TVs now is the bottom is falling out. It's ridiculous now, especially with post Christmas sales going on. TVs now, the 1080p stuff is just ridiculously cheap, and 4K is next. But I don't know what the shelf life is for 4K, because they're already developing 8K, and they're already developing what's beyond that. So I don't know. Like I might feel silly grabbing a 4K TV, only to have that be kind of obsolete not so long after.
Yeah, when's it going to get to the point where they just have like no number attached, just upgradable resolution? No, but that's got to be like what it is, right? Where you just stop buying like the next one and just your TV just is upgradable to whenever the signal improves, your TV looks better.
Maybe, I don't know if that's the holy grail, but hopefully it gets to that point. So yeah, just scrap your TV at some point and then buy a whole new technology. It's a huge, huge pain in the neck. So
I've heard good things, though. Said, I've heard really good things
about 4K.
Yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I mean, just like when we went from you know, standard def on our tube TVs to 1080, and we were like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. I remember going to electronics stores and just dropping down on a bench and watching sports in HD, because it was the most gorgeous thing I'd ever seen. And I'd sit there really for the whole 2 hours and watch a hockey game or any other sporting event. It was just so nice to see, you know, a rink or a field in that kind of ratio on a screen. It was amazing.
Golf is outstanding.
But 4K is golf is so nice. Yeah. I can actually watch golf on TV because the scenery is just so immersive. But now, like, the jump from 1080 to 4K is almost as crazy, as impossible as that might be to think, when you look at your TV and you go, what a nice picture. Like, 4K just hammers home. And to think what's beyond that, wow. I don't know how much better it's going to get, but it will. But anyway, so depending on how long my TV lasts, I've got a 7 or 8 year old TV now, my flat screen, and I don't know how much longer it's going to last. But once that goes, I guess I'll have to discuss with my wife, but do I go 4K or do I just stick with 1080? I don't know.
I think you skip. I think our move is going to be to skip it, get a really big, cheap 1080 TV, and then wait for the 8Ks to come out in 2 years.
Yeah, seriously. Like, honestly, like, come on. Like, 1080 is great.
Don't know how long.
It's amazing. Like, do you really need to indulge yourself that much? Like, eventually it's just going to be the norm, so.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, you buy a 1080p TV now if yours goes bust, but who knows how long it isn't until it's obsolete, or when your cable provider starts saying, well, you know what, we're phasing out standard def, or we're phasing out your 1080 box, and you're going to have to, from now on, get this 4K set.
That's regulamented. But you can TV look that up. I can't remember the year, but it's like we're locked into this signal for, I think it's 2030. The providers have to provide at least this as a base level.
Oh, wow.
It might be 2024, but this stuff is regulamented.
Right, so that would be like the networks have to provide.
Correct.
It, but how about the ISPs, like the Bells? How long do they have to provide it? They
might I don't know. That's a good question.
That's two separate things.
You're right.
Anyway, onto the Star Wars slant of this. So if a 4K version of A New Hope exists, as I guess this website here, theplaylist.net, is where I got the story. So Gareth Edwards is the one that kind of revealed that a print of the 77 movie is 4K ready. Do you hope it's the theatrical version, or do you think it's going to continue to be the special edition? That's Corey, what do you think?
Easy for me. I want theatrical. But there's just something about that. But actually, you know, thinking about it, with the 4K, maybe I would go special edition. Like,
Corey, you should hear the new Yub Nub in 4K.
Oh. Don't go there, man. No, but like, I was thinking about this. Like, when my son turns a little soon after he turns 5, this summer, I'm going to start watching the saga with him, right? And thinking about it, I want him to watch it on VHS.
Why would you do
that?
Why,
you don't want him to like it?
Why wouldn't he like it? What's not to
like?
Because
he watches Treehouse now, and he sees everything in like crystal clear super animation. He's going to look at that and go, what is this crap? How come I'm watching a high school play?
He's gonna say, Dad, fix the TV.
See, this is magic.
Why are these bars on the... Yeah, no, that's not... And this is not pointed at you, Corey, but I see this all the time. What is with parents of in our age group, of our generation, trying to recreate the same experience that we had for our kids? Like,
it's normal to want to relive that stuff, but like, do you remember watching anything that your dad liked as a kid? Like, do you remember watching Howdy Doody and your dad was like really excited about it and you'd be like, this sucks, Dad?
I like MASH.
Well, yeah.
I
mean,
my dad liked MASH.
Never sat us down and go, you have to watch MASH.
No, you just like you like spending extra like past your bedtime, awake time watching TV with your folks. That's different. But like the things that they loved as kids, you didn't love as kids.
No. Not at all, but even more specific than that, like specific with Star Wars fans, like, oh no, I'm going to show my kids 4, 5, and 6 first, and then maybe I'll let them see the prequels, but maybe not because they suck and I don't like them. Like, why not just let the kids see the story as any other, you'd read any other story in, ever in your life and start with 1.
Oh no, I disagree there. Three, it has to be 4, 5, 6 first.
See, I don't get that. I guess I, in a way, I do get that.
Because it's the way they were released.
Of course, it's the way they were released. But is that...
They didn't do a good enough job retconning it that it's better to watch it in the other order. No, I haven't been convinced of that. It's still... 1, 2, and 3 are released as prequels. And they play off of 4, 5, and 6, which need to be seen first.
Yeah, I agree. Like, when I watch with my son, I'm watching the original trilogy first.
I mean, I guess everybody can make their own choice, but I kind of don't understand. I mean, what other story will you start in the middle and then read the beginning?
Anything else that has a prequel? What else has a prequel?
No, but of course, not. We call them prequels, but I think that's kind of irrelevant. They're all kind of... Like, they're all episode 1 through 6.
No, see, it's not irrelevant to
me. They all tell a continuous story.
The sequence in which they were written it affects the way that they were written. And so because 4 came out before 1, to me that makes a big difference.
It does.
The word prequel it is a huge factor there.
Like, the only way I would do that is if I want to preserve the surprise of I Am Your Father.
Well, that's a big... There you go. That's enough reason right there. The biggest twist, the M. Night Shyamalan moment of the whole series is ruined if you watch it in chronological order.
So true.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that that's... Anyway, getting way off topic, but I see that all the time. And often the reasoning is because, well, that's because it's the way I did it, and it's the way it's the best, and therefore my children will see it this way too. Like, okay. And your parents probably also smoked six packs a day. Are you going to do that too? Are you going to make your kids do that too? I anyway.
Well, you know what? You know what else I'm going to make my son do? For it, like he when he plays video games, like he's going to try Mario 1. He's going to try the Super Nintendo.
Get out of here! Yeah, get out of here!
I'm telling you,
that's ridiculous.
He's not getting straight into battle. Whatever, you know, like Battlefront or like he's gonna try Mario. Like he's already done it. I did it with him last year when my buddy came down. We played all the old classics and it was over almost a year ago now and he still talks to me, but he was three then and he's like it's something that stuck with him, you know, like he really enjoyed himself and thought it was so fun, like even though it was super hard to watch him play.
I think that's somewhat weird. Like, I don't get me wrong. Like, my kids are also going to give Pac-Man a shot at some point and all the crazy games that we loved growing up, right through Sega Genesis and Super NES and beyond. But I'm not going to go out and go out of my way and find this old 8-bit stuff for them and say, well, now you're ready for 16-bit. This is what it was like for me in 1989. Dad, my friends are playing, like, super awesome games. Do I have... No. Now you're going to play the 32-bit stuff, which was me in the mid-90s.
Yeah, but you're taking it to a Kyle level there. Like, I would never do that to my son. Like, he's going to obviously start playing in, like, within the next couple years. But, I'm not going to let him play, like, all these super crazy games, like, right off the bat. So, I want him to have an appreciation for what it is and what it was. So, it's not like I'm going to make him play it for a year. Okay, you have to play this for a year or whatever, like. No, he's going to try it. He's going to get good at it. And then, you know, he's going to move up bit by bit. But I definitely want him to appreciate that before moving on to.
And when my son gets a cell phone, he's going to carry around the suitcase battery pack. And he's going to have that big brick that he has to hold to his head. Is that what you're going to do as well?
Well, I think we knew one person in our school that did that.
He's got to get a pager before he gets a cell phone, Kyle.
See, I never had a pager. These things were irrelevant.
But you know you got to teach him rotary phone, Corey. So you got to keep your landline connected at home and teach him how to use a rotary phone.
You got to be smart enough to pick and choose your battles here. Like that's nonsense. I think of another video game thing and prequel. Star Wars makes sense. Like those are my two things.
What other movies have a famous prequel?
Aliens now.
Yeah. With Prometheus?
Yeah. And they're making another one, I think. No?
I think you're right. Well,
Indiana Jones.
Technically, Temple of Doom. Yeah. Yeah, Temple of Doom is a prequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
So would you watch it?
And that's my favorite of all of them.
Chronological or order of release?
That I'd watch it order of release.
Of course.
I don't know if that one matters as much because the stories are kind of independent of each other.
More so. Yeah, more so. All right, are we going back to
James Bond?
Yeah, well,
that. Anyway, yeah. I guess we could fall down a real rabbit hole with James Bond.
Yeah, they jump all over the place.
Okay, so one more thing here on this 4K business. We may have touched on this, but my feelings intensify on it more the more I think about Rogue One. Do you guys hope, James? Do you hope that they revisit the visual effects of A New Hope in light of Rogue One, just to kind of streamline the two and make them both, more synced up in terms of a visual look?
Yes and no. On the one hand, I think it's almost necessary. On the other hand, I don't need another version of A New Hope in my collection. And I don't, you know, I feel like there's been enough additions that I almost don't want. I just want them to leave it alone. So overall, I'm going to say no. I don't really, even though I think maybe it could use it, I'm going to say no.
Corey?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say no as well. Like, we don't need another edition at this point. know, it could be a lot. It could be a selling point. Oh, there's like 2 minutes of new footage spread throughout the film. Or there's this and that in it. You know, like maybe you see the ghost in A New Hope now or something, you know. But no, leave it alone. Like, it's enough. We retconned it enough and or revamped it enough in 97 or 98.
I'm gonna pull a Corey. I'm gonna loophole it. So I think that at some point they need to make Fox needs to make the whole rights thing go away, and Disney needs to get the rights to A New Hope. And I hope that they would allow, you know, fans to have an access to a version where. You know, they could see the original cut of the movie as it was in 77, and then you have the special edition. And I'm all for them now at this point going back and updating the special edition again. And I'm not saying adding new shots. I'm just saying improving the ones that they added for that movie. Because some of them look like think of the Jabba. I would love for them to go back and fix Jabba again. So I'm not looking to add more time.
Yeah, just to the movie. Just blend it a little better
to fix
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
No, yeah, I like what you're saying there. That's a good loophole. I can appreciate that loophole.
And here's the one. I'm gonna get a little controversial on this one. Based on the Vader scene where he thrashes those guys and the fluidity of his movements. I would be fine, totally fine, if they went and found a way to enhance the lightsaber duel between Obi-Wan and Vader.
Reshoot it.
Keep the close-up shots. Keep the close-up shots of Alec Guinness so that you're emotionally connected to the scene. But I have no doubt that they could do some, you know, wider pan shots of Vader fighting Obi-Wan in a much better way, because the fight looks terrible now.
It's funny you say that. I watched it again after we talked about it last time. I just YouTubed that particular scene, and it really is almost painful.
It's not even a fight. I think they exchange blows two or three times, and it's more or less just pushing and crackling and talking and touching each other's sabers.
It is bad.
I mean, the emotional thrust is there, the dialogue is there, the tension is there, but the action
duel itself is bad. It is. And I love the scene. I'm not, you know, that's an all-time great moment in the Star Wars universe when he lays down his lightsaber and takes one for the team. But the action is not good.
And I'd be all for them inserting a few shots that just open that up a bit and make it a little more streamlined with the Vader that we saw in Rogue One, and something that's a little more fitting for Obi-Wan. Because I think if we're going to see him in Rebels, I think we're going to see him fight. And this is only a couple years before A New Hope. And I don't think they're going to put Obi-Wan in Rebels, make him fight, and make him look close to as bad as what he is in A New Hope.
Well, that can be explained too. Like in A New Hope, it's almost like he had his own suicide mission. You know what I mean? I don't think he thought he was leaving that place. Like he knew he needed to meet Darth and finish what he had started. Or
it still doesn't mean you have to look bad doing it.
Well, they more or less had
Vader look bad.
They more or less had a conversation. I don't even think he really like Vader barely even started with him at that point. They were still just getting things off their chest, and then Obi-Wan was just like, all right.
I'm all for them fixing that up. All for it.
I'll be all right. I'd be kind of cool with it as well. Like, get a few nice action shots in there as well. But I like what you said with the keep the one special edition, keep one option as theatrical. Because I don't want to lose that theatrical version. And Fox, I believe, is the only one who has the rights to it.
For now, yeah. I think they own that movie's rights for another few years. And then I guess they'll be up for negotiations. And I assume at that point Disney will get them back. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a business person in that regard. So who knows? All right. That's it for that one. Whoever's up next. reaching in that grab bag.
I think it's me if we're snaking.
Yeah.
All right, so Han Solo to begin filming in February 2017. I feel like I'm ashlaying every topic, but I'm just really up on all the news. I'm happy that just to hear that it's going to be starting with what, you know, what feels like soon. That's only week. You can count that in weeks now. I think it's the news itself is good. My only, I was looking for things to worry about. So I was like, so what's my concern here? And so far, all the news about casting has been so good that the only concern I can come up with is, you know, are they going to focus on the writing and the script as hard as they should? Here's sort of a metaphor. Like, if you've got an all-star team, do you worry about hiring a good coach? My only concern is, does the script get as much attention as it would if the cast wasn't so stellar? You guys think that's an issue?
No.
Well, I'm going to I'll defuse it for you. It's not an issue because Lawrence Kasdan is all over the screenplay. This is the guy that's written Han Solo since the 70s. And so unless Lawrence Kasdan suddenly loses it, and he's writing it with his son, John. Unless he's suddenly lost it, I think we're going to get the Han Solo that we've grown to love just with a few years shaved off.
Yeah, nice. We're in for something in this movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's got a lot of hype.
I'm so looking forward to this movie because I'm expecting this to stand totally apart from the overall saga. Like, I almost expect it to fill in no gaps. And, like, I don't think we're going to have to sit here and go, well, how does this tie into the overall saga? Because I don't think it's going to, almost
at all.
It might fill in, like, you know, if we first meet Han as a Imperial cadet or low-level officer, maybe we'll get some inner workings about the Empire. Maybe we'll get a little bit of information about what the Empire was up to, but, you know, in the post Revenge of the Sith years. But overall, it's going to be a completely stand apart thing, and I'm really excited for that because we can just put our feet up and enjoy this movie for, I think, the fun ride it's going to be. It's got Phil Lord and Chris Miller directing, and they did the Lego Movie.
Yeah.
And have you guys had more fun watching a movie in recent years?
No, yeah, it's pretty tough. No, you're right.
I mean, I think this movie is just going to be an absolute blast, and it's just going to be something that just stands totally apart from the saga.
Hey, how's this for?
And we won't have to.
Sorry, Kyle, to cut you off. How's this for an opening scene? Can you picture this? It cuts open, and there's Han in an Imperial cadet's uniform, and he's like getting onto a ship, and, you know, calling in his, like, giving in his call number and launch. Okay, you're cleared for takeoff, and we're all like, oh, okay, he used to be an Imperial officer, and then, like, we find out he's stealing that ship.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Like, do you think he's scoundrel right off the bat, or do you think we're gonna see some sort of reformation of, like, how he becomes that guy?
I think Han Solo was always Han Solo to a degree,
yeah.
And I think we'll see him if we meet him as an Imperial officer before he breaks out of there. I think we'll kind of see a defiant streak in him, or somebody who's just, he's not quite sure why he's part of the Empire.
No.
He's just there because maybe he feels like he needs to be there, or his parents expect him to be there, or all his friends are there, and he
it's
just
good place
went
to
along.
Get chicks.
Yeah, or yeah, exactly. And
no, the Empire is the perfect backdrop for that.
And every time he gets an order, you see him like sneer at the officer, or you just see him bristle at all the protocol and propriety of being part of the Empire. I can't wait for that movie, and I'm already kind of daydreaming about the trailer, and especially in, you know, after seeing Rogue One and seeing how much stuff was shot specifically for the trailers, like, now I'm thinking of shots that they'll put in the trailer that may not get into the movie, like, you know, our first look at Chewie, our first look at Lando, and I'm totally thinking that the last shot of the first trailer that we'll see, it will be Han Solo stumbling upon the Falcon or something. And that will be sort of how the first trailer ends. And it's just going to be so fun. It's just going to be such a trip.
Yeah, definitely. That's one thing I'm taking away from this as well, is that we talked about it just prior in this same episode, Disney, you know, their business plan for this, like Rogue One is directly tied to the saga. Han Solo is a part of the saga. So, you know, we both all said that we don't necessarily want to see this tie into it. So this is a good platform for them to push off from and explore new, like just make this thing entirely different from what anyone's expecting in a way, you know, like cowboys in space, whatever you want to do. Like they can do anything they want with this thing. And I think they should do that. Like really, like get that in people's heads, you know, it doesn't always have to be this certain type of film to be Star Wars. But
hey, won't Hondo be like the perfect age to be in this movie? Like, doesn't that line up perfectly?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he's in Rebels. There's no reason. And Han Solo looks like it'll take place even before Rebels. So I will fall off my chair if Hondo makes an appearance in this movie. I would love that.
It feels like the kind of movie, if you're going to get some Hondo to cross over from animated, like that he's a bit of a, even for an animated character, he's a bit of a cartoon. But maybe the Han Solo movie is the place where he might fit
in. The perfect venue for him.
Absolutely, it would.
He could be the hot, he could be the reason why he's in that hot mess with Jabba.
That's true.
Blame Hondo. I mean, that would be a great wink to fans, though, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah.
Everything is Hondo's fault. That would be a huge. That would be hilarious and a great wink to fans. And it would also be, I guess, it would depend on how they write it, but it also could be completely believable and appropriate.
Yeah, it could. And it could be like sort of accidental, like it's Hondo's fault, but not by, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be by design, although it could be too.
Yeah, it always is.
But yeah, there's a lot of potential there.
There's so much missed information in telephone with Hondo. Like, oh, I forgot to mention that.
That's it. That's what I mean.
All right. So, I mean, yeah, we're all anxiously awaiting our first looks at Han. And I think it was a movie that we all were like, yes, Han Solo spinoff? Or was it one of those, we don't need that. I prefer not knowing about Han. I think we all kind of fell a little bit towards, okay, I'll see it, but I didn't need to see it.
That's definitely...
I don't know if Corey... I think Corey was always excited.
I was always excited, and it's definitely, in my opinion, better than their original premise to do the Boba Fett movie.
Agreed. Like, I don't mind if Boba Fett is in this movie. Like, I just don't ever want to see a Boba Fett movie, I don't think. All right, Corey, looks like there's only one item left in the news bag. Why don't you grab in there and pull it out and see what you think about that.
All right.
I'll give you a hint. It's about episode 8 footage.
Hang on. I don't have this in my show notes. Hang on. No, you go for it, man. I don't have this written down.
Oh
episode H footage right. In the spring of 2017?
There you go.
That's a big Ashla, man. Come on. It's almost a Bendu in a way because it's expected, but yeah, I mean, what else? We got to look forward to this. What do you want? Like, you know you're not going to get it anytime too soon. We got to let Rogue One have its moment in the sun, you know?
I mean, by the time we get this footage, Rogue One could already be, you know, on DVD. That news broke last week that I think it was an Australian retailer let it slip that Rogue One was going to be available for home purchase on, I think, April 5th, which would line up with the same time last year for The Force Awakens. So, like, what's the delay here? I know they're trying to maybe give Rogue One a little bit of breathing room, but months and months of it into the spring? Like, what's up with that? Are they waiting too long to give us the first look at episode 8? What's the reasoning here?
Oh, they're working on it, man. Mm-hmm. They want to give us something, and they want to make us, it's all about that, man. They want to make us wait. They want to make us till we're like frothing at the mouth almost, you know?
I'm going to take an educated guess and say it has to do with wanting to win visual effects awards. And they're going to wait to release their new visual effects till after award season.
Well, this is just a trailer though, mm-hmm. right?
Well, yeah, but you'll see, so you'll see the new CGI, the new effects, the new whatever, the new cool shots. And that'll be in your mind. That may take away from some of the voting. If it looks cooler than what we saw in Rogue One, then what, you know, the Academy Award voters might be affected by that.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I'm just sort of hypothesizing why they might wait, and that the timing will be right after the Golden Globes and the Academy Awards.
Yeah. So if they're hanging on to any Episode 8 footage, the theory is that they're hanging on to it for celebration in Orlando, which is April 13, 14, something like that.
Okay.
That's a long way off, man. Then we're talking 3.5 months.
That is a long way off. Yeah, because even the Oscars will be over. You could do that. If that was the reason, you could still release in March. But I guess then they have to wait for an event, right?
Personally, it doesn't seem that far off to me. It seems almost soon that we're going to be getting another tantalizing bit of Star Wars.
But the first look at Episode 8 is coming way later than the first look at The Force Awakens. Like, we got stuff in 2014. In like summer of 2014, I think, for The Force Awakens, at least our first looks at it.
Now they've, well, that's it. They had to set the line, you know, like they had to set the trap earlier on. Now that we're all into it again,
the trap is always kind of set.
Well, that's it. Now they can get away with it.
Explanation. I have no explanation for. Oh, they can, of course, they get away with it. They can do whatever they want. Right, I can't offer up a good reason why they'd wait this long to give us a look. I mean, the movie's been shot for a while. There's clearly stuff they could show us now if they wanted to. They're just choosing not to. I'm sure they have a reason, but I struggle to figure out what that reason might be. All right. I mean, I don't want to wait that long, but not going to give us a choice. Hey, what do you guys say we visit in with an old friend for the first time in 2017 and talk to ads? So let's hear what he has to say this week.
Evening, chaps. Based on the superb CGI that took place in Rogue One, I wonder whether the likes of Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, etc., should perhaps agree to submit their CGI specs now so that any future film made by Disney has their current younger selves already in the can, so to speak. I'm not actually sure whether in practice this would make much of a difference, but something for you to discuss nonetheless. So all that's left to say is to thank you for a fantastic 2016 and onwards and upwards for a great 2017. Take care. Bye.
There goes ads for the first time in 2017. Thank you, sir. And another great question. We look forward to a whole year of awesome ads additions. So,
Happy New Year's, buddy.
Yeah, Happy New Year, ads. I hope you guys had a great, great celebration. All right, guys. Corey, so given the Tarkin and Leia computer-generated versions that we just saw, should Lucasfilm take advantage of the situation and prepare for maybe a future use for Finn, Rey, Poe, anybody that we've met in The Force Awakens? Should
I think they're smart enough to have already asked this question as well. Ads being in the profession that he is, I think it's a brilliant question. And personally, I think they've already signed off on such a clause in their contracts, saying like from henceforth, you know, like we can use your image if need be. And they've taken preemptive measures and kind of just normalizing the process for them, making it easier for them to be able to work with this kind of thing. You know, like by taking measurements of their bodies basically and just being able to recreate them like to a T. Like
Yeah, that's well said. They do that. They now submit to like these 3D scans for action figures and for that sort of thing. So I think they have all the digital data that they'd need already if they wanted to go with a CG Finn or Poe or Rey. And I wouldn't be shocked if we've already seen a CG shot of these characters that we just don't know about. And I mean, I'm not talking about a close-up, but I'm talking about some sort of fill-in shot somewhere where the character is already has been added digitally. I wouldn't be shocked if that's already happened. Well, I'll say
that I got fooled in Rogue One. I just found out. I'm always, you know, going on about how, you know, it's always obvious, but they fooled me. Did you guys know that it wasn't just repurposed footage of Red Leader, Gold Leader, etc.? Some of that was CGI?
I thought some of it was yanked from A New Hope, and I thought some of it was yanked from the deleted footage from A New Hope and then kind of rotoscoped in to Rogue One. But you're saying that there was actual CG of those guys?
Yep. Huh. I have to reconfirm. That's one source that I read today. It was an article I read today, but I can't remember where it was, but it was credible. And I thought, oh, geez, if that's true, then I missed
it. I could see it with the background and whatnot, but I don't... It definitely, if it were the facial features, then it definitely flew over my head.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ideal place to put it, too. You put a mask over it or a lens over his eyes. You because that's one of the points where people look at and go, oh, the eyes aren't right. So you put a lens over it. You put a bit of camera shake to it. Add some movement to the scene. Yeah, I could see why or see how they could definitely fool everybody with something like that. Right, I agree with you for sure, Corey, that Disney's already prepared for that, and I wouldn't be shocked either if you're right. Like you said, they've already worked that into the contract that if 30 years from now we want to do a digital Daisy Ridley, that they have the permissions already to do that.
You're cool with that, right?
I'm okay with that.
I mean, I'd be a bit shocked if they already had that in their contracts. Only in that I don't think it's been determined how much it's worth. So for people to just be like cavalierly just signing away their likeness, I'd be surprised.
Or maybe there's a clause that they can reopen negotiations if it comes to that. I guess I'd be surprised if that's gone unaddressed at this point.
Yeah, that's it.
It's got to be something that's in talks right now. Because I mean. On the one hand, I understand they owned, you know, Princess Leia's image, but not Han's. So that kind of stuff was negotiated in the past. But I'm thinking with what they're doing, with what they just pulled off, that actors and their agents have got to be sort of talking to, lawyers and figuring out what's it worth, my image.
Yeah.
Yeah, because these actors, in a way, they feel like maybe they can hold these studios to the fire, right?
Oh, for sure.
Well, if you're going to, you're pretty much casting my younger self 30 years from now. That's worth a lot of money to you guys. So you're going to pay me now and you're going to pay me later. I feel like the actors and their people probably feel like they have a lot of leverage in these situations, which they do.
Yeah, I don't know. It's sticky for sure.
I definitely don't think it's cavalier, though. Like, I think they've definitely, it's definitely been a topic of discussion amongst them. Even prior to what they've done so far, like having signed on to The Force Awakens, it was something that was discussed.
Yeah, maybe. It's not unreasonable. And I mean, again, we're going to talk about this down the line, and not to be insensitive, but there is certainly an Episode 9 angle to this with regards to Leia's character.
For sure.
They've already got Carrie Fisher's blessing to do Rogue One, so I guess you could... It'd be I guess, maybe premature for us to assume that she would also be okay with it for Episode 9.
Well, I don't know. Was it a blessing? Because I noticed... I know they owned her image, and I noticed in the roast, clip where she roasts Lucas, she says... She makes a joke of it, but she says, I don't even own my own image. Every time I look in the mirror, I got to pay you a couple of bucks.
That was a great joke.
It was, but I wonder, like, if it was her blessing. Like, I wonder if she didn't wish she had a better agent at the time she signed her contract.
Oh, no one knew what they were getting into either. Like,
Han did.
Yeah, I guess.
I think I read, and I might be wrong, I might be daydreaming this, but I think that I read that she did kind of give the okay for them to go ahead with this in Rogue One. And okay. That she was totally down with it. But that episode 9 might be a different thing. Obviously, I think she fully expected to be a part of that process. How things have changed, but...
Just a quick side note before we go any further, Kyle. Did you guys hear that I just read this today that there's a few episodes of Family Guy that she's already recorded that are going to be released?
I did hear that.
That's good news.
Yeah, for sure. You know, anything that's going to have her name attached to it, it's one more thing that we get to a little bit more time that we get to spend with her. Okay, have we answered Ad's question? I know where I stand. I think that Disney has already taken advantage of the technology available, and they're ready to do digital versions of all their new characters. Do we agree with that?
We all agree with that. Yeah, I agree. Sure. This is something that they're going to be doing more of, so as they sign these people up, I'm sure they want everybody to just say like, sure, here's my image. I'll just sign away on the dotted line. But I'm thinking that there's a lot of agents out there thinking there's cash to be made here. So I bet you it gets sticky and ugly in the near future.
That's why they got to get it done right off the hop. Like, they can kind of just say, you know what, this is Star Wars, take it or leave it kind of deal. Like, you want to be involved in this franchise, this is part of the deal. And, like, that would be a big topic of conversation between actor and agent.
Yeah, but actors' unions are strong, man.
Yeah, James, I'm glad you said that, because that is the ultimate thing here. It's actors are unionized, and you can't really just go rogue like that to steal some Star Wars terminology. It's... You are at the wrath of your union brothers and sisters if you decide to just go off the reservation and say, yeah, I gave them my digital likeness. I signed that away just so I could be part of Star Wars. I'm sure there'd be a lot of actors who'd be like, yeah, I would too. But when you're part of a union, you have to kind of toe that line, and everybody's got to pull in the same direction. Otherwise, you know, people who want to bust unions suddenly have leverage to do so.
Well, I definitely think the gravity of the franchise will have a bearing on that.
Studios aren't bigger than unions. It's been tested before.
Star Wars is.
Disney's bigger.
Yeah, no, unions are extremely powerful.
That one is, in Hollywood especially. But,
and I'm glad. I'm glad unions exist. They exist to protect constituents from corporations overreaching on their rights and their powers.
Nice segue.
That was a segue?
Yeah, I don't know what we're talking about next, but I'm sure there's a way for you to work that out.
No, what I'm talking about next is ending the show. I think we're done.
See, perfect.
First show of 2017 in the can.
That's all she wrote.
Yeah, and if you haven't already, guys, it's time to get on board with the Star Wars Commonwealth. Head over to starwarscommonwealth.com. There you'll find all the contact info for the awesome shows as part of our network. So it's Talk Star Wars, Generation X-Wing, the Skyhoppers podcast, Rogue Squadron podcast, and the Nerd Room, all of whom you should be paying attention to, as the Commonwealth is going to be doing some big things in 2017. So don't say we didn't warn you. And if you can, head over to iTunes. Let's kick off the year with a bang. Let's help the Tumbling Saber climb the rankings in the Star Wars community. And leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And we would be forever grateful for you. And otherwise, Corey, where can people catch you on the Twitter machine?
That'd be Chop Rules with a Z.
And James?
I'm still at Tommy Bombadil 1, and I just want to wish everyone quickly a happy and great 2017. It's starting off much better than 2016 ended, and so let's keep that going with a great year at Tumbling Saber.
Yeah, all across the Commonwealth, let's hope for some big things. Let's have a lot of fun talking Star Wars and talking anything else. We'd love to connect with you guys on Twitter, so give us a follow there. Definitely the biggest thrill of being a part of this ride has been the friends that we've picked up along the way. And if you haven't said hello via social media, please do so. We would love to chat with you. And as James said, Happy New Year, and all the best for 2017. And that's it for this show. Episode 56 is in the book. And catch us later this week on Sith Disturbers number whatever it is at now. Don't ask me, I can't count. And we'll see you then. Bye for now. I can save you. Just don't let me go. And I can see. I'll be waiting. Always waiting. Just don't let me go. Just don't. Watching you walking away from me. Were you watching me?